I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We are delighted to welcome in Richard Lapchick. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Richard is the program chair of the UCF DeVos Sports Business Management Program. He has written 16 books, working on a 17th. The president of the National Consortium for Academics and Sports and the director of the Institute for Diversity and Ethics in Sport. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Well, we're really hoping you can help us out here because, you know, we're a couple of middle-aged white guys trying to talk about what we're seeing happening around the country. And it is it's not an easy conversation because of the lack of understanding, I think, that we're seeing from people. Help us out. How can people help? What can be done? Has it gotten to a point where we've already missed the opportunity?
Well, I think the opportunity is to sustain the level of concern that has developed in the week of outrage. I think we've seen, you know, if you guys are two middle-aged white guys, I'm an older white guy. I'm turning 75 soon. But I've been watching things like this for literally almost all of my life. When I was a five-year-old kid, I looked outside my bedroom window and saw my father's image swinging from a tree with people under the tree picketing. And I didn't know what it meant, except a lot of people were angry with my dad, who was my best friend as a five-year-old boy. And it was because I would find out later, as the coach of the Knicks, he had signed the first African-American player in the history of the NBA. So that's how far it goes back in my lifetime. And you know, my hope is that, you know, with the age of videos, and we have all these things on record now, and I think that's why the outrage obviously has been as great as it is, and that there were protests in 114 cities yesterday. I don't remember anything that extensive during my lifetime. So what has never changed is it goes on for a couple of weeks, a lot of intensity, and then stops. I think that, you know, we have a young generation of people who have, I think, more passionate feelings about the issue and now have the documentation of what it looks like in terms of the issue of police brutality, but it's so far beyond police brutality. You know, racism is something that has been ingrained in society to the point that, you know, one of the most startling pictures that I could paint for you and your listeners is that the Forbes list of the 100 wealthy Americans has more aggregate wealth than all 230 the Forbes list of the most 100 wealthy Americans has a greater aggregate wealth than all 230 million African Americans combined.
Wow.
That's a big gap to overcome. So it's not just about police brutality, it's really about all forms of racism and how it impacts the black community, including during the coronavirus. I'm sure you and your listeners have read that the impact on the black community is three times as great as it is on the white community, because the health facilities that they generally go to in some of their communities just aren't staffed as adequately and well as health facilities elsewhere. So there's that disproportionate effect. You could look at pretty much any segment of our society and see that disproportionate impact. So I think the goal has to be to sustain that concern and make it a positive, constructive concern. And I think the role of sport, I think the world of sport has a role that it can play in it as well.
What makes the George Floyd incident and the repercussions from it different than the other instances that maybe you lived through or referenced or kind of filed through in your memory as you watched what unfolded in the 114 cities and cities like Chicago over the weekend?
Well, I think the visual impact of watching a white police officer do what he did, not in a moment of rage, there was no rage there, in a moment of calm, you know, he knelt there with his hand on his hip, looking around. He had people in who were shooting the videos of him saying, you know, he can't, not only hearing the victim saying, I can't breathe, but having people telling him, you're killing him, get off of him. And then at various points to see two of the other white officers also kneeling on other parts of his body. The disregard for human life, I think, is what, and over an 8-minute period of time, it's not like something that you saw happen really quickly and then it was over. This was, you know, brutality at its height in a sustained way that you can't turn away from. It is just so compelling and awful. And it's been repeated so many times in the news cycle now that it's emblazoned on the American psyche.
And again, I mean, you're talking about a man who's kind of begging for his life and then calling for his mother. I don't know if you're human and you're not moved by that.
Exactly. You can't not be moved by it.
How do we stop the looting and the violence that is connected with the rioting? Because I think you lose the moral high ground when it turns into kind of this destructive behavior. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what that anger is like, what that rage is like. So it's hard for me to understand how that transition occurs. But what can be done about it? Obviously you got to stop having these horrible messages coming out of Washington.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that that what you just said is really important, that you don't know what this rage is like, an outrage is like, because as a, you know, middle-aged white guy or an older white guy like myself, you know, we've never experienced that. We have, you know, hopefully read about it and learned about some of the disparities in the United States between Black America and white America and other communities of color as well. But we now are saying we don't understand it. So I think that we're opening the door to realizing that this has gone to a level that we really need to deal with and bring about systemic change, because that's what the violence is really calling for. And of course, everybody hopes, or almost everybody hopes, the violence stops as of now, but that rage is so great, I don't know how it's going to actually stop or when it's going to stop. It will stop, but then what do we do after that?
You're an expert on how sports have affected society over the years, and over the weekend we saw statements from Michael Jordan that was powerful. Doc Rivers, I thought, was eloquent. We just talked to Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern football coach, and have seen coaches issue their own statements and teams follow suit. From your perspective, when we talk about sports, and that's what we do here at the Sports Talk Radio Show, when you talk about sports, what role can sports play in our national recovery?
Well, I think, you know, we have a voice in the world of sports that's unique. First of all, it's probably the most diverse community in the United States, with the possible exception of the military. And, you know, sports icons are revered by a lot of people, and they listen to athletes when they speak. Athletes, for most of my lifetime, with the exception of people like Muhammad Ali or Arthur Ashe, were silent, because when they spoke out, they had their careers basically just ended, because the repercussions were that this sports world, the organization of sports, didn't want their athletes to speak out. Now, in the past 5 years, we've seen that athletes are speaking out and they're being respected for it. I think the death of Muhammad Ali was critical here because our athletes knew Ali was famous and knew he was kind of beloved, but by the time of his death, they read about all the things he had done over the course of his whole life and realized, I can speak out too. So having that athletic voice, I think, is going to be a really helpful component to it in the future. I think athletes are going to be constructive, as some of the statements you just talked about are. I saw an internal memo from Adam Silver in the NBA talking about having programs in all NBA cities addressing the issue of racial justice, not just police brutality, but racial justice in general. So I think sports can come up with a way. It's obviously not the solution, but I think it can be helpful because sport, I think more than anything else, can help unite people at times of trials and tribulations like we're in now.
Sport is a meritocracy where if you're good at it, you are kept on it. I mean, you are a lot of the economic and racial inequalities aren't as evident in the sporting world as they are elsewhere. And yet they're still, I mean, you look at Colin Kaepernick and what happened because of his protest and how he was kind of no longer needed in the NFL. And we're hearing people suggest that it would be a good idea for the Minnesota Vikings to bring him in as a player because it would help to somehow balance what's going on in Minneapolis. I'm confounded by that idea. I don't know how one thing makes up for the other, but I do know that when the NFL talks and when they make a statement as they did yesterday, you have to see it within the context of fighting against protests and people kneeling over the national anthem, and it just rings hollow a little bit coming from that league.
Well, I think that's been the strength of the NBA is in the aftermath of the Colin Kaepernick kneeling and the Goodell finally taking a stand after President Trump said, fire all these guys. He didn't quite use that terminology, but that the NBA decided to do something constructive and positive and support the players in their protest right from the beginning. And I think that is why the NBA is kind of has that level of credibility. I hope that the NFL can do some constructive programming. And I was at the Super Bowl this year, not at the game, but at events around it. And there were so many NFL-sponsored programs on social justice that it was really heartening to see that because it was the first time I had actually seen it. So hopefully, you know, the NFL is realizing that they can have a really positive, constructive role in this terrible crisis that we face today.
When people ask you difficult questions about what to do next and how they can help and how hopeful are you in talking to them and answering them? Do you encourage them? Are you, based on your experience, you have seen this cycle, you know, happen before and people kind of come out of it. Are you encouraged for any reason or are you, what do you say?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for probably 60 of my 75 years, and there has to be some level of optimism that change can come about for somebody to do it that long. So I talk about that. I talk about, you know, I think this generation, the people who are shooting those videos, have a feeling of egalitarianism that probably previous generations haven't had as widespread a way. And they also have the video camera. That's the game changer right now, that you can't, you know, I can't say something abstract about the reality of racism and it's a horrible statistic and you can forget it. I don't think most people are ever going to be able to forget what they saw on the street that day with that police officer on the neck of George Floyd.
Is there anything that we can do to help our own society? Is there anything that the normal person can do, you know, talk to your children about everything you're seeing? I don't know what it could be, but do you have any ideas?
Well, I think talk to your children is part of it. Find some social justice issue that, you know, is compelling to you. It, and there's so many of them out there, and become active in it, encourage your children to be active in it. That doesn't mean you have to go out and protest in the street. It means you could send a financial contribution to them or volunteer for them. Or, you know, there's so many different avenues that we can become quote unquote activists in whatever way fits our own lifestyle and our own belief system. But don't stay on the sidelines. Get involved.
It's a great
Thanks
message.
Very much for your
Thanks
time.
So much. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.